This is RSBNB Update, episode 553, recorded Friday, February 12, 2016, Inventing a Dead Horse. Hello, everybody. Thank you for joining us for RSBNB Update. Fulton is here this week.
Woo!
And also joining us this week is Dave. You might remember Dave from various episodes of RSBNB Update, but most importantly, he's the one who composed and produced our opening and closing music. Welcome once again.
Hey, what's up, guys? Glad to be here.
Yes, we very much appreciate that, and so many people find that iconic. So that means you're famous.
I try my best.
All right, everyone. So this week's update is the Sliskay Scoreboard Weekly Distraction and Diversion. Obviously, Sliskay is always up to his games and whatnot, and this is obviously a part of it. This gigantic sword crashed into the Varrock Grand Exchange. It parodies Guthic Sword of Edicts, as they say in the news posting. And it basically got Sliskay's faces on it, and those faces will talk to you. And if you examine it, it'll give you a scoreboard of the current god kills and the current standing in Sliskay's game. So, going forward from this, let's talk about the D&D and get that out of the way. Does that sound good?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So each week you can gather 50 Sliskellian pieces. Yes? Hello?
Nothing. Yes. You're in my throat.
Okay.
Sorry.
And after you gather 50 Sliskellian pieces, you can claim a large XP lamp. You can use it in whichever skill you want. And they appear in your inventory much the same way that strange rocks do, and this resets every Wednesday. So there's a little bit of a nice reward of giving you XP and just a general incentive to take part and maybe care about the gods if you don't already care.
Yeah.
How long did you guys find it took you to get your 50 pieces?
It took me roughly an hour to 2 hours with elf thieving.
Okay. Yeah, I'd say about the same.
Yeah, I haven't tried to collect them. I just keep what I get. I probably have 35 to 45. I've pretty much just been doing a tunnel vision invention. Tunnelvention. So I'm not really sure. I haven't really interacted much with it yet. But now that it's been brought to my attention that I need 50, then I'm probably pretty close, actually. So
yeah, and once you get 50, you can actually teleport straight to the Varrock Grand Exchange.
Gotcha.
And that gives the Pryftinus residents, you know, a reason to actually leave Pryftinus and go to the old Grand Exchange, which I think is nice.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So... anyways, so you examine the scoreboard, and lo and behold, Sliskay is on top.
Shocking.
It's an inside job. Conspiracy.
Sliskay has a score of 5.
It's fixed.
Armadale 3, Virago 3, Ceridoman 1, Brassica Prime 1. Everyone else is 0 with the exception of Zamorak and Marimbo, who are negative 1. So.
May I just say, the scores do not add up. I mean, in terms of wins and losses, there are 2 losses total and 4 wins. Where did Sliskay's wins come from? Who lost?
Now, is this sort of like Tuska, where you claim your reward in the name of someone? And like that's who you support? Is that how this works?
Well, no, there's no... I mean, this is just a tally up of what's going on. We're not involved in this at all. It's Sliskay's game.
Oh, okay. We just get the XP and he just does his own thing.
Yes.
This is sort of their... Okay, I guess.
It's just sort of a promotion for this whole year being countdown to Sliskay's final end game.
Gotcha. Quest. So it literally is fixed.
Well, I mean, yes.
Coded by them technically. Okay,
by the quest developers, yes. Strictly them, correct.
Well, I mean, I still think that last year's Virago event was fixed.
Well, yeah. I'm pretty sure
Tuska event.
They wouldn't just let us die. I mean, they wouldn't have just shut down the game. That would not be very profitable for Jagex.
That was a prelude to raids, wasn't it?
Yes.
Okay, gotcha.
Virago has one kill, and obviously that's the kill on Tuska. So that one's accounted for. There's 3 points right there.
Oh, yeah.
Armadil has killed Bandos, accounted mm-hmm. for. Saradomin won against Zamorak in the Battle of Lumbridge, plus one right. win. Brassica Prime, the Cabbage, has, of course, defeated Marimbo in the Cabbage Face Punch. So mm-hmm. that's those accounted for. So now the question of where Sliske wins, what did he win against?
I don't know. Is it like one of my thoughts? Maybe he considers Dishonor Among Thieves a win, even though he doesn't mark that down as a loss for Zamorak, because, I mean, in the end, he keeps the stone. I don't know.
Well, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but he is a god of deception, so that could probably be playing a lot into it.
Well, we don't know if he's a god. We don't know if he's not a god. So.
Well, yeah. God or not, though, I think I don't know. If he's kind of into it with deception, I think that might be a way, and he's how he's kind of trying to undermine everything.
If but, I really had to think about it, I could probably think of excuses for him, but I just yeah. I only just now saw that and was like,
and the kill is obviously Guthix.
Oh yeah,
right.
Yeah. So interesting. It'll be this first quest should hopefully skew those numbers a bit.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, things. Iklarin is on there, and he's involved with the quest, so mm-hmm. we know that much. V isn't on here.
Yeah, I don't think he was around long enough to warrant being on the scoreboard.
Right.
So, you think it could come from touching the Stone of Jazz that he's calling a win?
Maybe?
That counts for one of them.
I guess. I mean, technically, like, several of the ones on the scoreboard have touched the stone, so does that not count retroactively as a win for them?
Well, potentially should.
Well, he's not counting them. Saradomin, I mean, touched it, Zamorak touched it.
You could count kind of Saren having a win by being put back together from nothingness, perhaps?
Maybe.
But is a win considered a kill, or is it considered like just a overall victory?
No, because a kill is, I mean, kills are worth 3 points, and sure. wins are worth 1 point, which win is basically just you best them and nobody dies.
Take some of their power away.
Right. Yeah, like Battle of Lumbridge, where Zami just teleported out, basically hit the home tab. So I don't know. I'm trying to think of exactly what Sliske has done. I mean, what did he do in Missing Presumed Death? I mean, nothing significant. He captured Death and took over the Empyrean Citadel. Maybe that's a thing. I don't know. Sliske's ahead, everyone. I'll beat that dead horse. I'll just...
Yeah, and I mean, it doesn't add up, and it'd be interesting to know where this comes from. That wasn't provided in the literature of this week's update, unfortunately. So we're left to our own devices on that. And I mean, if anyone here would know what was going on, I think it would be you.
Yeah, I think I would, but I'm drawing a blank, I guess. I don't know. I'm trying to grasp at straws. Maybe it'll come to me after the podcast is over, I know.
Release of Nex, and you know, managing to pull off the whole ritual of the Majorat, maybe.
That was a long time ago, though. The ritual, that was back Fifth Age.
Yeah,
I don't know. Can we count that?
I don't know.
He might be, though. That's the thing. Like I said, I don't think he's necessarily known for playing by the rules. And if he does, he sure as hell bends them. So, quite possibly.
Yeah.
I don't know. And, I mean, as soon as I saw this, it was like, what? Why is he on top? And, I mean, I'm just at a loss for words here. That doesn't normally happen on this podcast, but who knows? Who knows at this point is what I have to say. So
I'm pretty sure it's him getting away with the stone. I'm pretty sure that's it.
Yeah,
just in Missing Presumed Death and
but
Dishonor.
But that's one.
If you count it both, like both times, Dishonor Among Thieves and Missing Presumed Death, I mean, the end of those quests had him with the stone. I don't know. I'm trying to vilify this, but it's not working too well. That's my final answer.
All right. Sounds good to me then. Dave, any thoughts from you or nah?
Nope.
Okay. Well, if you are listening to this and you have a better idea than what we were able to come up with here, please do let us know either in the comments or feedback for this episode or send in a discussion topic for next week. Questions at rsbnb.com for that. Got that in a little early, but...
Nice. Well,
but, you know, can't be blamed. So, the cabbage. You think the cabbage is ultimately going to have a role at the end of this?
He will be the ultimate... He will be the end god. He will be the one god.
Yeah, have you heard the clan quest theory on the cabbage?
No, I have not.
Okay, we'll have to do that another time then.
You're just gonna tease the listeners?
Well,
like
yeah,
this?
there's a whole elaborate idea behind the cabbage from some people in clan quest about exactly what role he might be playing in all this, right? So.
I see.
There's got to be something there.
Thanks for the cabbage striptease there. I appreciate it.
Wow, okay.
Moving swiftly on.
Yes. Or you could say swiftly on.
Yes.
Nomad's Elegy is coming out next weekend. Or not next weekend, sorry. In the coming week. Which is obviously kicking off this whole year of Grandmaster questing, working up to the ultimate end goal of this quest series. 75 construction is going to be a requirement, along with a couple of other 75 skills. So, I mean, it's nothing we haven't seen before, but at the end of the day, it's going to be a high-level quest focused on combat. We looking forward to it?
Yes.
Okay. I am not, no.
Oh, why not?
I am not big into quests, and I am not huge into combat. Like, I heard a rumor that the boss fight is going to be equivalent to Max and Rage Rax.
Oh, and, Max and Rage Araxor, isn't that bad?
It's man, that was rough. I got my kill for comp. I killed two birds with one stone, and that's enough for me.
Thing is I know Araxor really well, but I don't know Nomad really well, so I'm worried it's going to take me a while and I'm going to be without my Master Quest cape for a bit. But
are on this podcast, so you do have a week.
I do. That's true. There's a deadline
for actually doing Nomad's quest. I actually used one of my Death Touch darts on Nomad, and so I never really did the fight. But then I put my foot in my mouth when I had to go back to Dominion Tower and grind that out for the tasks for comp. So I kind of know it like the back of my hand now.
So did you do it before EOC or after EOC?
Before, I think.
Oh, okay.
Whenever those came out, because I
they
used them like
out
that
before.
Week.
Before.
Yeah. So yeah, that was way before.
Okay, I just didn't know because you said Death Touch Dart. Took me 13 tries.
Mm.
So.
Yeah.
We'll have to wait and see on that, but full requirements are 75 mining, construction, and wood cutting, so not too far out. Things we've seen before in the quest requirements are also Wellgothic Sleeps and Blood Runs Deep as quest requirements, as well as Throne of Miscellanea and The Mighty Fall, so... It's going to be drawing on previous quests, but nonetheless, you think this is going to be the height of the combat for the year, or are we going to have to do more combat?
I have a feeling there will be some serious combat, but I wouldn't be shocked if this is the hardest in terms of quest bosses.
Well, yeah.
Because Nomad just carries such a...
Yeah, they're going to pretty much, if they go harder than this, it's pretty much going to be like another PVM boss. Like, I think Nomad is pretty much the epitome of, like, quest combat. And I think they probably want to keep that. I don't think they want to snowball too much, because then it's just going to sort of get out of control and nobody's going to want to do quests.
Yeah, and I mean, we got to remember that the first Nomad was designed without the evolution of combat in mind, so...
Right, or invention, or, you know, anything like that.
Yeah, so you are going to be able to augment yourself and, you know, make things a little bit easier if you know how to use EOC, so we got that going for us. All in all, I'm personally not too worried, but those could be famous last words, right?
Right.
Yes.
But, yeah. So, I got a question. If you go to 1:06 in on the behind the scenes video, there's a creature here with big eyes and ears. Is that Zanek?
Hold on.
1:06 into the behind the scenes video.
Yep, that is the new model of Zanek. Yep.
Yeah, it
looks so much nicer than what they did for the Mighty Fall. The Mighty Fall model was it was terrible. It was horrendously ugly. So I'm glad they actually made it like a nice character model for this quest.
Now, is anyone a little bit disappointed that we learned in the behind the scenes that Zanek is in the quest and has obviously recovered?
That was just what I was going to ask. I mean, I don't know. I think, because they said at the time, after the Mighty Fall was over, that was it for Zanek, really.
Yeah, that's right.
So.
And that's why this was a bit of a surprise to me. I'm watching this and it's like, oh, is that Zanek? So I have to rewind it and see. And, I mean, obviously it is. And she has fully recovered.
Well, just so you know, we're never bringing Wildy or Free Trade back. So I'll just let that sink in.
That's a good point. You make a good point. And we're also never going to sell XP or GP, are we?
That's right. Yep, exactly.
And we're also not adding a way to play the RuneScape combat like it used to be before EOC.
Yes, we will never revert.
Yep.
So, yeah, Jagex. Let me break out my pad and paper here. Yeah, exactly.
But, yeah, I don't think it's a big deal. This is, if they were bringing her out for, like, another goblin storyline, I think it would be something. But this storyline is sort of like a WoW Gothic Sleeps, where, except you're bringing back like old dead characters to, or old slash dead slash forgotten slash whatever NPCs that you haven't used for a while. And I think that being that she is sort of the figure of,
yeah, it's a fun WoW factor. It brings people back. Oh yeah, that's cool. I want to see what happens to so and so. You know, not a huge thing, but it pulls you in.
Yeah, it's nice just to see him back for a small quest.
Yeah, and there's also going to be a reward from this for invention called the Soul in the Box that helps you with thieving.
That'll be nice.
Which I think was their sole purpose and reason for invention was so they can release more rewards. Because they're like, yeah, we have nothing to give you for quests, so here's a skill. So, you know, but yeah, it'll be interesting. I'm really looking forward to what they bring out with this skill, just in terms of skills.
All right.
Instead of combat, so I guess this is the first step.
All right, that sounds good. So that's what we can expect next week's in Nomad's Elegy, and of course, the God Scoreboard will move after that quest, so it should be interesting to see who moves where, and what ultimately happens with that. So now that brings me to a point of the show where I wanted to ask Colton something, because you obviously have the Master Quest Cape. So going into Nomad's Elegy, I thought it would be a good idea to have a bit of a rundown of the Nomad lore leading up to Nomad's Elegy. So I'll let you talk for a few moments on that.
Yeah, so Nomad's a fairly simple character. We've only really gotten two quests worth of information on him. Basically, what we know is that he created the Soul Obelisk that's in Soul Wars. And basically, when characters die in Soul Wars, it channels the energy of those souls to his big throne thing, and it gives him a lot of power. And he's kind of become a bit power hungry from that. And so, back in the Fifth Age, Zimberfizz ends up recruiting the player character to investigate Nomad's tent, which ends up being the entrance to his grand temple. We sort of fight through some stuff, the balance, or not the balance elemental. My mind's spacing right now exactly what that foe is. It's in the Dominion Tower. But regardless, we fight our way to find Nomad, and he believes that we have been sent by his quote-unquote master.
Avatar.
Yes, thank you. Decaying Avatar. We fight through the Decaying Avatar, and there are some puzzles, and then we get to Nomad. And he believes that we are an assassin, and so he tries to kill us. But the player character obviously survives, defeats Nomad. Zimberfizz joins us down there, and we kind of look at the body, think, oh, he's dead. And then we take off. Zimberfizz is taking over for Nomad in the place of his Soul Wars duties. And one of the last cutscenes we get of this quest, being Nomad's Requiem, is that Nomad is in fact not dead. He wakes up and he teleports away to an unknown location. Then we really don't know much about him and his dealings between that time and the sixth age when we see him next, because the next time we encounter Nomad is during Dishonor Among Thieves. Zamorak decides to have the player recruit Nomad as one of the members of the crack heist team that he wants to use to steal the Stone of Jazz. And so we go to find Nomad, and we find him in Death's office. Death, Harold, is trying. They're sort of like locked in this like battle of wills of some sort, and Death is trying to basically take Nomad because apparently he has been stealing souls that belong to Death, and he should be dead himself if not for the power that he has been absorbing through his soul throne majig. And so Death doesn't really want him to let him go, but because the player has rescued Death before during Missing Presumed Death, he lets Nomad go. We go through the whole quest of Dishonor Among Thieves, get to the Stone of Jazz, and right at the very end, Nomad reveals that this whole time he's been after power for himself, and he tosses his spear at the player character, hoping to quickly grab a piece of the stone and teleport away. There are two endings to this quest, however, and which could become interesting when we come to Nomad's Elegy to see if they really capitalize on the different decisions made. If you decide to dodge the spear, then Nomad will end up grabbing a piece of the stone and he teleports away. But if you end up choosing to grab the spear and throw the spear back at him, he does not grab a piece of the stone and instead teleports away before Zamorak has a chance to kill him. So I'm not sure if that piece of the stone will come to mean anything when it comes to the next quest, but just something to keep in mind.
I think I had him try and throw the stone back at him.
Yeah, so yeah. Did I.
Because, I mean, Nomad was supposed to be dead, so I wanted to keep him dead.
He's kind of a jerk.
Yeah, and I mean, just remembering how much time one spent fighting Nomad in Nomad's Requiem.
A little bit of a vendetta.
You might as well just keep him dead, right?
Right. Yeah. It's better off that.
Well, that's very interesting. I wonder where this is going to go with this. And, I mean, is it possible you think that we might see Nomad's death in this, or is he too important?
I would not be shocked. I actually kind of think that might be the case. I don't know, because the preview for this quest makes it clear that it looks like he's gone back to his whole soul-siphoning stuff and is even looking to step up his measures of stealing souls. So I would not be surprised if... I don't know if that would count on the scoreboard, though. So it'll be interesting. Maybe Nomad will end up killing Ikhlaren and we'll see Nomad on the scoreboard? I don't know. I'm tossing darts at the wall here.
I don't know if we want to entertain that idea.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll have to see for ourselves this Monday.
Indeed. All right. Any questions from you, Dave, on that? Make you at all interested in doing more quests?
I can't say that it does.
Ah, how unfortunate.
But we'll see how it goes.
Okay, then. Well, let's move on to the boatload of tweaks and fixes that we had this week, and it really is a boatload of tweaks and fixes. Almost literally with that. This is one of the longest patch notes entries that I remember in recent history. So I'm just going to start naming off some items on this list that I thought might be interesting to you guys. First off, female legs no longer look deformed when wearing skirts.
That's good.
Mm-hmm.
Was that the whole knee thing that people have been complaining about? The unrealistic standards for female knees that has been on Reddit several times?
I don't know. I don't go there, so I'm not sure.
Oh, well, it was one of the good posts, but I digress.
You can now disassemble a selection of partly made ammo. You couldn't do this initially with invention, so this includes headless arrows, bronze bolts, all the bolts up to rune that are unfinished before you add the feathers to them, unfinished broad bolts, and every kind of arrowhead up to dark arrowheads. That's good. I mean, I never had any intention of making dark arrows when I was fighting dark beasts, and I was wondering why I couldn't disassemble the dark arrowheads I was getting. So that's a happy thing. The Czech invention UI for augmented equipment now correctly displays drain rates per second rather than per game tick. This might make it look like the drain rate has increased, but it's only a display change and not a numerical increase to drain rates. The time left field was always correct. This has not changed.
This is good.
Yep. The clan notice board now displays the name and world of clan avatar wardens. So if you're trying to track down where your clan avatar is and where it can go, you need to be on the same world as one of the avatar wardens. So if your clan doesn't have a home world, this can be very useful to you.
Now, clan notice board, is that in the Falador clan camp?
Yes, it is.
That's a bit of a pain.
Well, you
I don't
can get
know.
There with the Vex.
Yeah, true. I just don't carry my Vex around a lot. I probably should more.
Yeah, I mean, I don't carry it either because I always have my green farming things in my hand, but there you go. Abyssal demons on the Slayer Tower's roof now count towards the Mauritania task. Whip it good. Okay, I thought we'd get a reference like that.
No. Sorry.
I've heard that before, but I don't know who the artist is.
Devo.
Oh, okay.
Classic 80s, man.
All right. Fletching any bolts no longer completes the 3,000 broad tip bolt task. This was from the Zodiac training event last week. So apparently, yeah, you didn't need to do broad bolts.
A little bit late on the patch there.
Yeah. And completing the Rune Mysteries quest will now award a lamp rather than directly giving magic XP. So that's good if you're a peer or something. You don't want magic XP. And Osman no longer uses the player's walk animation during the contact quest. So you could have... You could have one of those triumphant walks or an angry walk or I don't know what the other one is.
Oh, I wish someone would have gotten that on like a video, because that sounds like it would have been pretty fantastic to watch. But
oh my god! All right, the cooldown of Apollo's helmet has been reduced from 5 minutes to 8 seconds. Not really sure what that is. The cooldown on the magic flute has been reduced from 5 minutes to 30 seconds. The cooldown on the creepy doll has been reduced from 5 minutes to 2 minutes.
So,
any input on that?
Yeah. Apparently, there's a whole line of treasure hunting you can do after a number of quests with quest items. Colton, did you know about this?
I've heard of them, and I thought I would go after them for a while, but they weren't a part of the Master Quest Gate list, so I didn't end up doing it.
And that was
going
to be the next question.
Yeah, they're not. I think I might. You know what? I'm going to put that on my list of things to do.
I mean, Apollo's helmet, a magic flute, and a creepy doll.
I'll go after those here soon.
I mean,
I've heard of the creepy doll.
It's not like you're going to be you know, trying to disassemble these like you could disassemble the corpse of the woman last week.
Yeah.
For simple parts.
Right.
Anyways, continue, Dave.
Undertones there. The Gobi disguise kit can now be toggled off and on. Any of you guys use that?
That's the part of the same reward tree. So no.
Gotcha. The Gobi and underwater disguise kits can now be fed to baby trolls if you should want to do that for some reason. Pre-name titles no longer turn the player name blue while using the quick chat feature. I actually never noticed that happen. Adding a player to your friends list will no longer cause their name to not be visible on the list if they are offline. A safe spot with Araxar when path one is closed has been fixed. The poison damage from the Wyvern crossbow no longer scares Agaroth into avoiding confrontation. Decaying Avatar from Nomad's Requiem had its life points and max hit increased. And Jade Vine from Back to My Roots had its life points life points and max hit increased. So
just a couple notes there. Agaroth, great way of getting bonus XP weekly. It's the NPC at the end of the Ashdale quest. So definitely go fight that if you want some XP. And Araxar Path 1. That fixed. Wasn't that the easiest way to go, path one?
Oh, no.
I think it's path two.
Path two is arguably the fastest. Path three, you're likely to take the least damage.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, you'll need to explain that again one day. Maybe we'll do a walkthrough or something.
It's been a while. It's been about a year.
Okay, so let's continue on with the patch notes then, Colton.
All right. Oh, gosh. See, I should know how to pronounce these names because I'm the lore person, right? But I don't. So, Nezikchened. There you go. That's what I can do. From the Legends quest has been rebalanced to have more life points and deal more damage. He's a demon of some sort, so that's a thing. Witch's experiments from the Witch's house had their life points and max hit increased slightly. Treyas Daith from the Haunted Mine had his life points and max hits increased. The Crane and the Pickaxe now deal more damage as well. The Sea Troll Queen from Swansong had her life points and max hit increased. Kashai from the Fremenic Trials had his life points and max hits increased. The strongest version of Kashai will now attack faster as well. The Jungle Demon from Monkey Madness had its max hit and life points increased. Tolna from Azul's Bane had their life points buffed. The Toxket Dill had its life points, armor, and max hits increased. Why? It was still pretty... Man, now the fight kill got harder. The Familiar Options interface has a vertical scroll. Thank goodness. Familiars fond of their retro mouse over text in the top left can now toggle it on in interface settings. The modern mouse over text option has also been migrated to interface settings. What was that? I don't remember that.
You remember in the top left of your screen?
Oh,
it would say
yeah.
Walk here rather than, you know, having a little thing where your cursor was.
Okay.
That kind of became not useful when we had the resizable window.
Yeah,
because you don't want to look up to the top left of a 1080p screen and have that.
I much prefer the modern version of this.
Yeah, me too. Me too. And right. And there's also one more that I really have to commend Jagex for doing. They have made their login screen anywhere on the website responsive. So basically what this means is if you have a say you're using a RuneScape on your phone or something, basically what you can do is say this page is going to work whether you're on your huge desktop or if you're on your phone, and as you shrink your browser window or you shrink your phone display, it will expand and contract so that it works better and it's a lot easier to navigate around. So I'm very happy about that. And if anyone wants to see what this ultimately comes down to, all you need to do is go to any RuneScape login screen and just expand and contract your browser window, and you'll see the changes that happened to it. So very nice. Very nice fix.
Neat.
Yeah. See, those are the kind of things that make me happy when it comes to RuneScape. I don't know about you guys, but that's just me. That's just me.
Good for you, Shane.
I know. All right. Anything else from the patch notes?
Nope.
All right. We have information of when the first NXT closed beta weekend will be, and that's February 19th.
Hi. 1 week.
Yes, I am very excited for this.
Yeah, me too. I think this is going to be the largest update of 2016, aside from quests, obviously. Mm-hmm. And it's been a long time coming, moving away from Java. And, I mean, if you look at the current client and you try and do anything that, you know, is rather strenuous with it, and you put it on a graphics card that's not, you know, the best and greatest, it will break down. It breaks down on integrated graphics card. It breaks down on OS X, Linux. So hopefully we'll have better cross-platform support with this and better frame rates across the board. So it's going to be...
Yeah, I was pretty disappointed when the whole HTML5 kind of flopped and didn't do what they thought it was going to do. So I'm really glad that they sort of ramped everything up and are still taking it that direction and just improving the graphics even more.
Yeah,
so.
And I mean, this is the logical progression to HTML5, because the idea of having it in a browser is good, but you're still limited to the sandbox that the browser puts up around you. So this, you know, lets them have total access to the hardware, actually program on the video card with their own APIs at a very low level compared to going through the WebGL engine, which they would on the web browser. So this is going to be excellent. And as a reminder, if you've had membership since January 31st, 2012, or your Gold Premier Club, you're automatically in. And anyone who also has the Game Breaker title is in as well.
And know anybody with the Game Breaker title?
I do not. I would like to get that title, so we'll have to see if I can find any bugs that would be worthy of doing that.
Yeah.
You know, especially on the OS X side, because I imagine testing on OS X won't be as prolific as it is on Windows. So, yeah. Kicks off 19th of February at exactly 12 noon UTC.
Break the game.
Yep. Also on that same vein this week, there's a new development blog out about the NXT client, specifically relating to load screens and the removal of them. So that you don't have the loading please wait thing popping up, because everything is going to be streamed to your computer. Granted, it does need to load in more, but they are able to accomplish that with the new client. So definitely give this a read. And there's lots of...
That's so awesome. Coming from a legacy RuneCrafter where you pretty much had to stop and load the map every time you teleported to the Nature Altar, it's going to be pretty hype. I'm just going to say that. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's true. I imagine, though, with the new client, you could increase the minimap all the way and teleport in and just click where the rune altar is and not need to do anything else. I'm just theorizing, but...
Get me really excited now.
Starting to sweat over there.
About runecrafting. Right. But if you're a technical person, definitely give this a read, because there's all kinds of things in here too about shader permutations. You guys know what shaders do?
Nope.
Basically, shaders are things used to calculate environmental effects and pretty much any kind of special effect you see on screen on the video card. And you can access these shaders using the low-level programming languages, which they're doing. And then with every item in-game, that just creates many thousands of permutations. So what they've had to do is look at ways of reducing these permutations to, once again, optimize the game client. Because anytime you're accessing the shader, you're putting load on the GPU, which in turn puts more load on, or rather reduces the capability of other things your GPU can do. So it's really great to see the level of optimization that they're taking from it. And another thing to what you were saying, Dave, about HTML5, they say at the end of this article, a big issue with generic game engines such as Unreal or Unity is that a user can easily create different materials that require many thousands of shader permutations, increasing the time it takes to load them all in. Since NXT only has to deal with a very specific, though large, set of data, we can optimize our rendering and shader code to perform the job more efficiently by generating fewer permutations. And this right here is the main reason why you write your own game engine rather than using someone else's game engine.
There you go.
So,
didn't they also say that NXT will hopefully enable bump mapping as well?
Yes. I don't know if that's going to be a launch feature,
which I think is really
though.
Cool. No, I wouldn't think it would be, but still, it's just I like the direction that's taken.
Yeah, and they're also going to be doing lots of stuff with shadows and whatnot too.
Yeah,
I was really hoping.
Didn't they mention night and day cycle as well?
No, that's not coming. You can still hack it by changing it in your house and closing the client as a way of doing that if you want night or permanent day depending where you are. But they said just use that as the main way of doing that right now.
Interesting.
Yeah, I was really hoping we could get Siri on next week for the Quest and the NXT beta, but he's going to be out of town, so unfortunately we won't be able to do that. In addition to, of course, being a Questier, Sirion has extensive programming knowledge in the area of game engines, so this is something that he would be experienced in.
What he gets for being a corporate man now.
Yeah. He's heading to your country, actually.
Really? That's awesome.
Yeah. But that's
depending on how you look at it.
Yeah. But. Well, oh, I'm sure it is. Anyways, so that's that. I guess that just leaves us with this year's Valentine's Day promotion.
Hooray. That's fun.
Yeah, that's all I gotta say about it as well. I mean, you get the pedals, runs from the 11th to the 15th, and I'm not too fussed about doing this promotion, but for those of you guys out there who do prefer these Treasure Hunter promotions, it's there. Have at it.
Maybe you and Chief Snake can do something.
Not my cup of tea, honestly.
Something.
I'm giving you the look right now.
Yes, dear leader.
There was a topic in the RSBNB sandbox about dear leader.
Really?
Yeah. I'm not logged in, so I can't see it, but on this browser. But yeah, someone caught your dear leader reference and posted a picture of Joseph Stalin.
That's great. But, I wish I'd seen that.
Oh, it's still there. I'm sure you can find it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, our dear leader. Oh, it's just a photo of Stalin. But,
that's great.
Yeah.
Still awesome.
Anyways, anything else RS related before we move on to the questions?
I don't believe so.
No.
Alrighty. Well then, moving on to the questions. The first one is an audio question from Parnassius.
G'day guys, Parnassius here with a quick question about invention. Just want to start by saying I'm really liking the new skill. I think it has a lot of diversity and isn't the normal kind of grind that the other skills are. However, two things come to mind about it. One, do you think they should have had scaling XP for breaking down augmented weapons? So tier 70 gave, say, around 360k XP, tier 80 gave the current 540, and tier 90 gave, say, around 750-ish k. The skill hasn't really been the full item sync we thought it was going to be, since the majority of players are using tier 70 or 80, but very few are breaking down those tier 90s. Two, With the amount of charges needed, do you think they really need to lift the 4-hour 10k trade limit on Divine Energy so people can sort of make more of it? Once again, thanks for the great podcast and happy RuneScaping to all.
Thank you, Parnassius. Colton, I'll let you go first.
Yeah, I really like the idea of scaling things. How I probably would have recommended it done is basically you, as you level, you cannot siphon or break down from, like, you can't do tier 80, tier 90 until, like, X level, you know, and sort of level gate that. But in addition, I think they should have, yes, scaled the XP for obviously tier 90 being the highest, but I think they also should have made it so that as you move up in the tiers, the disparity between siphoning XP and dismantling XP would have decreased, not like exponentially, but it would have become, because I mean, level 10 right now, if you siphon, it's 270k, and if you dismantle completely, it's 540k, no matter what the weapon is, doesn't matter. Instead of that, maybe that's the case at, say, tier 70, so you do have an incentive to break down the lower level items, but say at tier 80, it's more like 310k for siphoning, and at tier 90, it's 380k, I don't know. And so as you go further on, you don't necessarily have to, because I think that's why a lot of people aren't using tier 90s and tier 80s for this kind of stuff, is because they don't want to dismantle it entirely. So I don't know if I would have complete, because there's less tier 90 items in the game than there are tier 70 items. I mean, that's just the reality. So we want more tier 70 items to leave the game in total, but I think that's just how I would have done it.
All right. And when you say scale it exponentially, do you mean scale it so that you get more XP or less to slow the scale down?
I was merely referring to the fact that I don't, like, when I say that I want the gap to shrink between siphoning and dismantling, I don't want it to be, like, a huge disparity. I want there to still be a significant impetus to completely dismantle the equipment, but I want it to be slightly less detrimental to siphon when it gets to the higher levels, so that once you get the ability to break down a tier 90, you can, and it'll give you more XP, it'll give you the best XP, but you don't necessarily have to, and so you're still incentivized to sort of use the new content that you've unlocked, you know?
All right. What about the fact that once you get to item level 12, you get the same amount of XP as you do for disassembling?
I don't know. That's confusing. Maybe. Yeah, I don't know. I wonder
because
if they'll
top out at 540k right there.
Yeah, I wonder if they will change it eventually to the point where you do gain even more XP for dismantling at level 12. I don't know. I've heard that they're going to be moving XP around. It's a rumor, but that they may move some XP around when the next batch of invention updates comes out. So I'm wondering if they'll nerf things or if they'll add XP to level 12 dismantling. I don't know. So it'll be interesting, but I think that there should be incentive to use everything. And there should always be a reason to dismantle your weapon if you're super rich, but you shouldn't have to get reasonable XP is my main point.
All righty. How about you, Dave?
I agree with sort of having XP tiers for the tiers of armor because, I mean, straight out of the gate, after you're 27, you can start getting 540k drops every couple hours. So, I mean, when I was doing it, I went from like 27 to like 60 in like a day. And that's kind of crazy. And with the fact of only being able to augment tier 70 plus, that really has bottlenecked the market. I don't think you should be able to augment like an iron plate body, but I think maybe the lowest tier could have at least been Rune. And I mean, just to start out that way, but people would then again argue that, yes, it's an elite skill. You know, it's not for somebody, you know, straight out of Ashdale to come and, you know, start grinding away at invention. But I mean, it's, I think it would be a lot better, you know, when you're level 27 to, you know, when you're grinding it out for 2 hours, you should only get a 200K drop. You know, when you're using, you know, like Drygors or a Nox Scythe with Bandos or next sets, you should be getting, you know, 540K drops, you know, maybe the 750K, like he was saying, just to sort of balance it out a little bit more. The fact of it being breaking down a level 12 and getting the same amount as 10, it really just comes down to the gear experience to actual skill experience. And there's been calculations done to where it's actually more experience to siphon at level 9
yep.
than level 12.
That's right.
It costs more, but the invention experience to actual weapon experience is the lowest.
Oh.
So with that being the case, I think that those ratios do need to be tweaked a little bit, whether or not it is the actual invention experience being increased or decreased, or if the gear experience, either way, I think it needs to be sort of equaled out to where it's more lucrative to do certain things. Like Colton was saying, you know, you want to sort of incentivize breaking stuff down, but you don't want to make it necessary. And I think that this is kind of like the curve just sort of falls off. And I think to keep that going, they could rearrange the numbers a little bit to where, you know, maybe in the future we see it being the best to actually train all the way to 20 or 15 or, you know, whatever the cap is. But right now, why would you have something? It seems kind of silly to me to be able to level something up to level 15 if there's absolutely 0 point to do it, because no one's just going to level a weapon up past what is efficient, more or less. I mean, it doesn't do anything to the perks. The perks really don't rely on that. Doesn't do anything to the stats. The only reason that data is collected on how much experience is needed for anything above level 12 is just purely the fact of knowing what it is. No one has ever really done that, you know, knew what they were doing with invention. So I think that needs to be reevaluated. If you're going to have a piece of gear go up to a certain level, you should at least make it, you can have it fall off a little bit, but not just a complete drop off. Like you could have it to where it's a, you know, DRs, you know, diminishing return as you go on, to where maybe the most efficient is 15 and then 20 is, you know, you can, anything above level 20 or even anything above level 12, it starts to affect the actual gear stats to where after a certain point, if you're not going for invention experience or, you know, after you have the max level that you want, you can actually train it to use rather than just being this shell that you're trying to get XP with. So, you know, say I have 120 invention and I'm, you know, I want to get stuff for PVM. I'm going to train that. Okay, well, past level 12, it incentivizes me to go to 15 or 20 if I want extra strength bonus or if I want my perks to reach, an overclocked sort of tier, I guess, you know, because you can go to like 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, well, if you go 15 to 20, you can increase another rank on this perk by a little bit or something like that.
Like,
I
imagine
think that would
being
be smart.
Able to take, you know, a level 80 weapon, make it an 85 weapon at level 15 and take it all the way to 20 and you got the equivalent of a tier 90, right?
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Like that would have been the ultimate way of saying, okay, so here's your reason to level up this weapon and keep using it and keep it with you rather than, you know, just using it as a way of getting XP and getting to whatever invention level you want to.
Right, exactly. And I think that having that on the back end rather than having it sort of increase with each level is good because it does incentivize that longer playing, because most people that are going to do invention are going to want the front end. Just give me the experience, give me the levels. Let's get this done. Where then the hardcore players, if you want to call it that, the people that want invention for the gear and the perks, they do that. And then once they're ready, they can go past that. And that's where the utility of those final levels come. And that's where they really wouldn't have to edit any of the experience and ratios. They can just truncate it there at 12 and then just add an entire new reward system after 12.
For if you're above a certain invention level, right?
Correct. Yeah, and they could tear that off with invention level. After a certain point.
What level would you say?
Well, what they could do is,
let's look at the XP curve for invention as a whole.
Yeah, what needs to be done is whenever you can go, Pat, you got level 10. You can go to level 10 at level 27. So basically, you can either not make it an increment of 5 that you can go up to. So like after you can get to level 10, you can get to level 15. You can either take it like a couple levels at a time and do it that way and then space that as needed. So like, okay, level 60, you can get up to level 14 or something. Level 70, you can get up to 16. Level 80, you can get, and so forth. So that way, when you are 90 plus or, 110, you are getting the max what you can do. But if you're only level 60 and you can only get to 14, someone with 60 invention shouldn't be able to walk into Virago with GG gear, pretty much.
Right.
So you're sort of splitting that up, but you're also, you're not necessarily, you're giving the player the option to do it as you go, rather than saying you can only have this benefit at this perk. They have all the benefits of each one, but they can only get so much of that benefit. So they can only go 2 levels past 12 at this level. And then once they get a little higher, they can go 2 more levels. It's not what they're getting or restricting what they're getting in terms of content. It's just basically limiting how much of it they're getting at a time, if that makes any sort of sense.
Yeah. And would we also be talking about increasing the amount of invention XP you get from siphoning and disassembling as we go higher then?
Or would going we want
to leave that into intact? I'm just trying to summarize this here.
Right. Well, I think that based on the tier of item that you have, 70, 80, 90, I think those should be separated. Obviously, 90 being the most, 70 being the least. That should be tiered. But in general, once you go past 12, I think that basically just needs to be a separate thing rather than experience. That needs to be like perk or stat enhancement. So,
okay. So basically you're saying give the perks and gizmos a reason to exist by increasing the amount of XP you get if you have them on and you use them when you disassemble them.
Yes, but also basically anything past 12 or whatever level it is, that the perks, completely aside from giving invention experience, the perks become more useful rather than from getting invention experience. So like after I have 99 invention, I want to train up a weapon and give it the best possible perks without disassembling it, because I basically want to just buff this weapon up. So, if I'm going to level 13 and I have a perk that does 3% extra damage to demons, once I get to level 13, that bumps up to 5%. Once I get to 14, that goes up to 7%. And then I get that all the way to 20 and I cap out at 15% to demons, and I don't want to break that down. I want to use that for anything when I'm fighting demons, type of thing, to sort of be like the end game invention. After you've trained the actual skill, you want to actually train your weapons to use what you've done in the skill. And I think that's kind of what it's lacking right now. It's pretty much just a grind to get level, get max cape back, get comp cape.
Yep.
There's really no payoff. There's no perks. And I think that would be amazing for them to put in for utility, along with adding more perks, but being able to level the perks up, not based on how many components and how much money you can invest with all the RNG that way. I think you should be able to get the perk, and then basically after you've trained it, you get that weapon up, and then that's how you get better.
All right. And, this leads into my side of this thing, in that being a week and a bit in, we have a fundamental flaw in invention. And you've just illustrated that, okay, it's a grind right now. Yes, that's understandable when the skill first comes out. But What's the point of leveling up when the XP you get is the same at level 27? So that is the fundamental flaw in invention. I think Parnassus' question and both of your guys' responses illustrate that effectively. And that's what I was going to come into this podcast and say before I even knew what Parnassus' question said. So it's nice to see that we're all kind of thinking here on the same track. And, I mean, ask yourself, what is the point of invention right now?
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, it's kind of disappointing. And I was actually sort of confused after the day 3 update where they made they nerfed the
perks,
weapon gizmos and stuff like that. And they made And they made training up and disassembling gear the best experience.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, so
it was a plus 1800% increase.
Right. And I was curious.
It wasn't,
I was like,
QA'd.
This doesn't make sense. And I was curious because it's like all you have to do is augment, because I figured you had to augment it and then add a gizmo, add perks and stuff. It's like, no, you just make it to where you can put perks in it, but you don't have to do anything with it. I mean, that's kind of like the best XP in the game being, you know, making unfired bowls and not firing them.
Yeah.
Like, it just seems sort of unfinished. Like, I'll make this to where I can use it, but I'm going to destroy it all before I can even get to the end game. It just seemed kind of weird to me.
Yeah, and I mean, to my knowledge, the second part of invention coming this month to deal with tools and equipment is not going to be combat-focused. So I don't know what we'll see or if we'll see anything about changing the way leveling gear works. I think that they seem like they're happy with the way that's working right now, which is kind of disturbing when you think about it.
It really is.
We're not asking for, you know, the perking method to come back. At least I'm not asking for that. I don't know about you guys, but just give us more reason to
level
up.
There needs to be more incentive.
Weapon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, because I literally right now, all the high level people that are grinding it. Yeah. All the high level people that are grinding it is to get max cape back or to comp or just get it out of the way.
Yeah.
Like, there is literally no other point. Like, after I get 99, obviously I'm going to go to 120. After 120, if there's nothing out, I'm never going to touch it again. I mean, granted, I'm going to have to, you know, spend charges for all the 290s that I augmented, but I mean, it is what it is. I don't know.
Yeah. It just feels unfinished with that, right? And
yeah.
Like,
which I guess I can sort of get because they have announced that they are releasing it in tiers, but
yeah,
it's still, I feel like
still,
there should have been more of a solid base on day one.
If you are releasing the skill with the primary way of training it, that should be worthwhile.
Right.
3,800 people with level 99, give or take, and 690 with 120 as of the 13th of February. So, and you ask these people about any other side of invention, you ask these people anything about the perks in invention, my bet is they're not going to be able to tell you anything. Not because, you know, they're stuck up and don't like perks. It's because there's no reason to look into them or anything like that.
No, it hasn't done anything. And honestly, they wouldn't even make any sort of difference in any high-level PBM. They wouldn't do anything at Virago, like anything noticeable. I mean, rank 4, half these perks, is like a plus 3% damage or like a 1% chance to crit. It's like, what? For being an elite skill, I should at least get like 10. I mean, not to be greedy, but after dropping this much money and time on something to get a plus 2 increase at demons or plus 2% chance to do something to a demon, that's just kind of like...
Or even 2% damage.
Like, right, exactly.
Like on a hit of 1,100, that's like, or 1,000, that's 20 damage, that's nothing.
Yeah.
It's nothing.
It's laughable for sure.
Like, I like the skill, I want to like the skill, but it's a fundamental flaw.
Yeah. And like, I have this bad feeling that they released the skill, basically releasing the skeleton of it and then thinking that, oh, we'll fill it out with all these quest rewards. Well, you can't do that.
And no one
because
is, and
no one
no,
wants
no
to train
one's
it
gonna,
day one.
No one's going to, you know, train this up. It's going to be a slower skill to train, but oh no, we forgot to balance the perk side of things. And to compensate with that, rather than rolling everyone back, rather than creating a huge stink in the community, we're just going to make it faster for everyone. And the skill is ruined.
I don't think it's... I don't think it's... I think they've made mistakes. I think that all that really needs to be done right now are small tweaks. If you,
yeah, these
I mean,
are small tweaks.
I think they'll make them, though. I don't know. Maybe I have a little too much faith.
I think they tried to go too far than they did with Dungeoneering. Dungeoneering, they released it. It was complete. It was... I mean, there was...
No, it wasn't.
A few little
flaws.
Well,
North of 120
there was
complete. Or North of
Well, right, 99. Right, right. But I'm saying, like, 99... Like, the skill came out. It was completely, like, solid to 99. And then they released, you know, another set of floors and then another set of floors. But...
And that's okay.
You know, it feels... Right, right. That's fine. But... With this, I mean, the equivalent of what Invention was like on release is like them releasing Dungeoneering with like
floors one to
only
50.
Tier one and tier two weapons and like only a few different rooms and stuff to where it was like you can sort of do this, but like if you wait about 4 months, then there'll be better ways to train it. And that can be argued with all skills.
I'm not trying
every skill on release has been sort of self-sufficient.
I'm not trying to defend the on-release. I think I've made my point clear before that they royally fudged up the release, but I think that it's a lot better now. I think the main issue is the fact that perks aren't worth it.
Yeah,
and that's what
Dave touched on.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to say that the skill is perfect. There's definitely a flaw to it, but I think that, I mean, Dungeoneering... One could argue that it was flawed from its beginning, and the
it's
fact
not
that
skill.
Well, yeah,
it's not skill.
Well, Divination had some small issues, but Divination was really simple. Dungeoneering was a good release. I mean, that was I don't know. I mean, Construction. Come on, do we not remember the Falador Massacre? That was a bit of a gaping bug that they didn't ever look into.
But it wasn't a bug in terms of training it. It was a bug in terms of...
Right. I'm speaking...
It was a repercussion from the skill. I don't know. I think that I can forgive the first few days, even though I think that it was... I think it was silly that it got through QA like that.
Oh, yeah. I forgive the first few days, too. It's just it feels like there's no point.
Yeah, it's not the fact of it being buggy. It's the fact of content. I feel like they're withholding way too much. I mean, regardless of what, like, I completely, not even regarding the first 2 days on the huge just crash and everything. I'm speaking more of, like, they released a shell, and I feel like they're relying too much on we will release this every 2 weeks as to where they could have just released a little bit of each of their stuff. Like they could have released a little bit of combat, a little bit of skilling stuff, a little bit of fun perk stuff, a little bit of that. And then they could have added more that way rather than just, okay, day one, boom, here's combat augmenting, do this for a month. And then, okay, now we're adding skills in. Like I think they should have added a little bit of each type of thing they wanted. And then they can sort of fill that out rather than sort of, okay, here's your container, and here's the bottom layer, and then we'll let you play around with this for a bit, and then everybody gets 120, and then we'll start releasing stuff that's, like, low level, and it's like, you know, because how much do you really think we're going to use all the tool stuff if the perks aren't good? All the people with 99 and 120, we're not going to go augment a rune pickaxe and go sit at Sarenstones unless it's got a really big turnout. I think just in terms of combat-wise, or content-wise, rather, that they, I feel like they're withholding too much with banking on the fact that they ran out of ideas to reward people for quests and stuff like this, mini games. So they sort of released this platform to do that. But in doing so, they've withheld too much, and it's just seemed like an empty skill so far.
All right. I think we've beat this dead horse.
Yeah, I was just about to say that, but ultimately, I think we have highlighted the problem with Invention, and yeah, we did, of course. Do accept the apology and are okay with the way it turned out after the first couple of days. It's just the combat aspect of it. We'll have to wait and see until later on this month if that fixes anything, but the combat side of the problem is still going to persist, and part of me tells me that we're not going to see the same amount of XP for combat, as you will see for skilling, which is unfortunate.
You mean the flip-flop?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too. But what are you going to do?
Yeah, thank you, Parnassius, for that question.
Yes, thank you.
We did do that one to death.
All right, thieves, take it away, buddy.
Hey, how's it going, fellas? This is Thieves, just calling in with my first audio question, both to prove that I'm not Irish-sounding and to keep Shane away from my kingdom. My question this week is, why is your account name your account name? Mine is Thieves, of course, because I'm obsessed with the smithing skill. Take it easy, boys. Bye.
Obsessed with the smithing skill. I think he means the thieving skill.
No, he's not 200 mil thieving or anything. Nothing like that. My name is... This is my name. I'm sorry. It used to be 101 Duck 1, so I guess that's more interesting. My friend who introduced me to this game was 101 Frog 1. And another friend who joined at the same time didn't follow the name... the whole animal convention, but was 101 Steve 1. And so we were all, we followed sort of the same format. So yeah, that's where 101 Duck 1 came from. I just did a duck. So that's why I chose it. Yeah. But Colton is fairly boring. I'm sorry.
And Dave, you have a brand new name.
I do have a brand new name. Yes, I do. I will go a little bit backwards to give a little history on the three names, staple names, I guess I've had, which most of you will probably know me as Dave0338. That has two meanings. Back in fifth grade, actually, a friend of mine, he just randomly started calling me that. I was like, "Why are you calling me that?" He's like, "Oh, he really liked the show Jackass, and he liked Steve-O," and he's like, "Oh, I'm just gonna start calling you Dave-O." Like, okay, whatever. And I guess it stuck. And the 338 is actually completely meaningless. It has no meaning whatsoever. I think fifth or sixth grade, back in the days of AOL Instant Messenger and Yahoo and all that stuff, friend was like, "Oh yeah, you should get this." I'm like, "Oh, what should my name be?" They're like, "I don't know, just do like Dave-O like 338 or something." I was like, "All right, whatever." And it stuck for more than 10 years. And then after I maxed, which was May of 2015, I changed my name in-game to Soul Alter to reflect my favorite skill in the game, which was runecrafting. And then just recently, a couple weeks ago, I changed my name to Arcane, A-R-R-K-A-I-N. Just this basically is a stylized version of Arcane in terms of magic, because with all RPG games I play, I usually default to any sort of caster or mage class. So anyway, that's sort of my brief history of names.
Interesting.
Yeah, very good. Mine is and has been since the very beginning Shane12088. And the reason for that is because I just copied Mike's name. And his was once again the same thing, except a random string of numbers on the end. So, much like Dave's first one, it's just a name and some numbers put on, and it's just stuck since the very beginning. So that is where that name comes from. It has no story behind it, and once upon a time I considered changing it to just Shane, but that was taken, unfortunately. But that's all I really got to say about my name.
Very good.
Yeah, no long diatribes with this question, so we're good. All right. Thank you
Thieves,
for your questions, Thieves and Parnassius. If you guys want to send questions in, email them to questions@rsbnb.com, or you can leave us a voicemail on the Google Voice, which is 571-57-BNB, or 571-572-2632. Okie dokie. So, tech news. You guys interested in Twitter?
I use it. Yes.
Okay. So this week, Twitter has some numbers for us in terms of their growth and prosperity for the last quarter. Their user growth is flat. And
has it been increasing since release?
No, it's gone flat since about, I want to say 2012.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, so they can attract new users to it, and they're meeting earnings requirements, but they're not necessarily doing well. They came in with their revenue for this quarter of $627 million, which for a company that large with that many users, when you compare it to something like Facebook, it's really not that great. It averaged 320 million users in the quarter and was forecast to hold in 323 million users. So as a result, Twitter is flat and they are not making the money that they would like to make. So rather than, you know, anticipating what's going on inside Twitter and what's causing this, because I mean it's probably from a whole myriad of factors here, what would you guys do to bring more traffic to Twitter, since you both said you use it?
Oh gosh, make poking a thing on Twitter. I don't
poking
know. Yeah, like on Facebook. No, I'm teasing.
I don't know. I feel like it's very short and concise. I feel like it is a very good medium for social media. And what sort of entertains me a bit is I've been using Twitter probably since release. It was back in like 2007, 2008. Really back before it sort of blew up, I guess. And I would always try to get people to join, and their response would always be, I don't want people to know what I'm doing, because that was their main, like, back before like social media really blew up altogether, like Facebook and all this, because that was their tagline. You know, what are you doing? So they just thought Twitter was, oh, you know, I'm walking down the hall. Oh, I'm at the grocery store and all this stuff. And you go on Twitter now and that's not what it is. It's just little one-liner ideas. Pretty much just little taglines. I mean, if you're a business, that can be very useful. As far as adding features, I'm not really sure what direction they could go.
I mean, I was but personally I think just making it long form.
They've sort of rebranded themselves with the whole Moments thing. I don't really use it, but I've seen commercials like, you know, oh, what's this for? And then it was Twitter thing. I'm like, oh, wow, that's kind of cool. Sort of bringing in the whole just events, I guess, if you want to call it, to Twitter. Just
yeah, moments bringing for everything that all you follow, curating what is a main
sort of like a news hub or something like that.
And I mean, that would be good, but what they've brought out with that isn't really that useful, because I use it as a news feed. I follow all the news organizations and whatnot, and right now there's nothing that I can't get from RSS. So it's losing its value to me as a news platform. So I'm not really sure.
Yeah, and most people, like, I don't have too many real life friends on Twitter. Basically, most of my real life friends just have it to follow like celebrities or sports stars. Not many people are on there, you know, tweeting stuff or, you know, sort of sharing their own ideas. It's pretty much they just have a Twitter to lurk with people they follow, which is fine, I guess. I mean, a user is a user in terms of, you know, just Twitter growing overall. But yeah, I really don't know how they could just promote that sort of thing. I feel like they've sort of, I mean, obviously hit a wall.
Yeah, but everyone is on Facebook who posts things that are useful, because that's where all the friends are and everything. And Facebook can monetize all that data, all the likes, all the posts, everything like that, whereas Twitter can't. So it's going to be very interesting to see where they go with that. Also this week, also on Twitter news, they brought out their Trust and Safety Council. That is what it is called. And I quote, on Twitter, every voice has the power to shape the world. We see this power every day, from activists who use Twitter to mobilize citizens to content creators who use Twitter to shape opinion.
Hooray.
Does that sound a tad Orwellian or not? The Trust and Safety Council.
Just a bit.
A little bit, yeah. I guess I can see what you mean.
Full council sort of sparks that one.
Yeah, Anti-Bullying Pro, the Anti-Defamation League. let's see.
Really weird superheroes.
Feminist Frequency and GLAAD are a couple of the initial members of this council.
That's what we need. We need more Twitter police.
Issue. They've also partnered with the Dangerous Speech Project.
Gotta protect the minority guy, all right?
Anti-Defamation League has been involved in all kinds of interesting so-called protections of defamation of people who are just expressing an opinion. And, of course,
guys are going to be busy with the election coming up. Oh, hey, I don't like you. Oh, bleep you. Yeah. Like, now what's going to happen? Yeah. Are you going to get banned because you have an opinion? Like, I don't
said
see
that's
going to
happen
gonna...
this year. But the Feminist Frequency, I think it's safe to know what that one's about. But perhaps this is
all I'm
going to
say is good luck.
Problem. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I mean,
that's what Twitter needs. They need to bring users in. They need more Twitter police. Let me tell you, that really makes me want to tweet.
Yeah. Same here. And I mean, just looking at these names, it seems
it's
kind of one-sided.
Space. Sorry.
Twitter's oh, right. We forgot the trigger space. Warning before discussing this.
Uh-oh. I've been triggered, Jane. I'm sorry. I shouldn't make fun of it. I'm sorry. Forgive me.
It's all right. But, yeah, I think this could be potentially part of the problem here. But we'll have to wait and see what happens to the platform going forward if they keep hemorrhaging users. I mean, we don't want them to become MySpace now, do we? Because... MySpace is a dead network.
Yeah.
If Twitter gets sold to Yahoo,
I think Twitter has its niche. I think it really is its own thing. But you know, I don't think Twitter's going to fall to Facebook. I think the only thing Twitter's going to fall to is Twitter 2.0, honestly. Just as, you know, MySpace fell to Facebook. Facebook was pretty much the exact same thing. It was more professional, and it sort of accomplished what MySpace did more efficiently. You know, I don't think Instagram is going to, you know, Instagram can't take over Facebook because it's sort of a different platform. Twitter, it's kind of a, I don't want to say less spammy because half the stuff on Twitter is just nothing but clickbait and spam, but it's sort of, it's just simpler. You know, it's instead of scrolling down a newsfeed full of pictures and posts and albums and stuff, you pretty much just go down and you can see, you know, a news story and just sort of like little one-liner things and what your friends are saying, what your friends are thinking. You know, and you can have a little conversation. It's not just this giant thing.
Why is Instagram successful and Twitter not?
Right.
So, I don't know. And I'm convinced that by the end of the year, they'll be sold off to someone. But
it's possible.
So our next piece of tech news is that India has officially rejected Facebook's free internet offering. And this is Indian regulators basically saying, no, Facebook, you can't come here and bring free internet to parts of the country because you're only going to be including parts of the internet that you want us to see, namely Facebook. So this is the government of India enforcing net neutrality, in that some things can be free and some things can't be free, whereas net neutrality says everything needs to be treated as equal on the internet, and that's what the government of India is after with this. So
strangely progressive of India.
Yeah, and I mean, I kind of like this story because it's in a way reverse net neutrality, because every time you hear net neutrality, it's to protect the consumers from the ISPs doing something evil, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas this time net neutrality is being used to protect the people of a country, India, who might not have access to the internet to begin with. Rather than just getting a filtered internet from Facebook, they want, if they're going to be getting the internet, they want them to have everything on the internet, which I think makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So I just kind of put this in here because I've never seen net neutrality acted upon this way. And it's a very interesting interpretation of net neutrality, because when you think about it, companies like Facebook, Google, and, well, Twitter to a lesser extent going back, were proponents of net neutrality in the way that would benefit them, but now net neutrality is being used against them, so I wonder what they're going to have to say about that. If anything.
Right.
So, I don't know. It's interesting to see how this works in parts of the world where there's not widespread internet access, but I commend India for doing this because I know me, for one, would not want to be on an internet that's controlled and filtered by Facebook, or Facebook as a company at the very least.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm happy about that.
That's cool.
Yeah. Anything else before I move on to the next tech news story?
Nope.
All right. For anyone who has an iPhone 5S or newer, or any iOS device, do not set your date to January 1st, 1970. This will brick your phone, and you'll need to wait a day, they say, to be able to access your phone again and set the date properly. Basically, this happens because January 1st, 1970 is when the Unix timestamp, which these devices run on internally, is at zero. So there's something in the device, whether it's a divide by zero error or a negative timestamp, that's causing it not to boot. So you are going to need to be very careful with this if someone says, hey, set your clock on your iPhone to January 1st, 1970. Yeah, some people say it comes back on after 5 hours. Others say changing the SIM card can work. And others say that didn't work at all. So in the very beginning, it's best not to fall victim to this prank as a way of saving yourself from unnecessary pain going forward.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah, very interesting. Anyone ask you guys to do that this week?
Nope. No.
Yeah, don't do that. Don't do that. But, yeah. Always interesting that Apple has these vulnerabilities that come in. Last year we had the text messaging one where you could send a text message with some terse characters in it and it would crash the messages application. So, very worrying indeed. Hopefully we'll see a fix to this in the near future.
Yeah, it's strange.
Yep. And it shows the process here on the video and what happened, so...
Speaking of that, aren't we coming up on the anniversary of that Mew Day in RuneScape where everybody typed Mew and everybody would log out around them? You guys remember that?
I do not remember that. When was this?
Oh my gosh, this was way back. This was probably 2008 or 2009. Basically, if you typed in a Greek letter Mew, the whatever character, I guess it was an alt code character, when you typed that, you would log out and everybody within like a 7 or 8 box radius would log out as well. And if you just be forced to log out, it would just be instant.
Oh, wow. All right.
Yeah.
Well,
I think it was like early February, I believe. I'll have to research that.
Okay, so our next piece of tech news is actually a little bit science-related, but gravitational waves have been confirmed, and they've been used to pinpoint a black hole collision that happened 1.3 billion years ago. So, basically, what happened this week is that the scientific data has confirmed that 1.3 billion years ago, two black holes collided and emitted a lot of energy. And we were able to feel that energy sometime back in 2015. To be precise, I believe, let's see, let me pull up the dates here about when this was. It was in the actual press release, but basically what happened is that on September 14th, 2015, at 5:51 Eastern Daylight Time, two laser interferometers basically observed these waves passing through the Earth. And a couple of milliseconds later, another one on the other side of the country observed the same thing. And that's how they were able to verify that this actually happened. Now, you might be asking, how does this work? Well, basically what happened is that 1.3 billion years ago, these two black holes got closer and closer together and started giving off energy in the form of gravitational waves. And then when they collided, they formed one larger black hole. And then that in itself emitted the huge energy. Now, you might think normally two objects colliding would emit some kind of explosion. Well, this is kind of similar to that, except it's on the order of gravitational wave energy that we can't see with our naked eye or any of our telescopes that we have currently. And those gravitational waves move through space at the speed of light, and that's why it took until September 14th, 2015, to be able to detect them here on Earth. And wow. By confirming these distortions in the gravitational field, gravitational waves were confirmed, but this also, by the definition of the gravitational waves, confirmed Einstein's theory of relativity from 100 years ago.
Wow.
Which also confirms the link between matter, space-time, and energy, E equals mc squared, mm-hmm. which in turn basically means that you can build a time machine to travel forward if you can reach near the speed of light.
You can go fast enough, yeah.
Yeah. So the question is, what comes after this? And basically, how can we look at space differently rather than just looking at the visual perspective, but also looking at the gravitational perspective now? So it opens up a whole new realm of astrophysics going forward.
Wow.
Yeah, and there's a whole description here of how this works using the two twin laser interferometers, and it's not a scientifically dense reading, so you can pick up the press release at the Caltech link in our show notes at update.rsbnb.com and read through it. And then I'm sure if you wanted to find more detailed information on this, you could eventually find the full scientific report that's been put out on it.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see what comes from this.
Mm-hmm. Yay, science.
Yeah, and there's also sound of what these two sounded like as they moved through the Earth at the same frequencies that were recorded. Because every time something vibrates, it vibrates at a frequency. So here's what it sounded like. One moment. So those two little thuds you hear at the end, that's the gravitational wave hitting their instrumentation.
Kind of sounds like a drop of water, like a whoop.
Yeah, yeah. It's been enhanced to fit into the realm of human hearing by tweaking the frequencies by a bit. So I mean, initially you wouldn't be able to hear something like that at the frequency it vibrated at. So they did have to raise it a bit into the human ear form. But that is what the general background noise of the universe sounds like.
That's very cool.
Yeah. Indeed it is. So
the universe is beautiful.
Let's play that one more time. Alrighty.
Gonna set that as your ringtone, Shane?
No. It's too quiet. It's too quiet.
Oh yeah, I getcha.
Yeah. All right, well, let's move on to the Skill of the Month update then. February Skill of the Month is Constitution. Looks like Dave is in a bit of a race here, aren't you?
Doing what I can.
Currently, Sorensen 57 is in first place with 2.8 million XP gained. Second place is Dave with 2.5. And third place right behind you is Pernancius with 2.49. So you think you're going to win at the end of this?
We'll see. We'll see if I can pull off a little prayer relapse like I did last time. Night of pulling it off. Didn't log out for like 12 hours.
Oh my!
Well, no, that's not possible. But anyway, yeah, we'll see what happens. I'm on the invention grind, so it comes true.
You'll need to log out once every 24 hours now.
It's possible now. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
23.
What are you fighting on?
I'm actually camping bandos, trying to be as self-sufficient and losing as less money as I can.
Oh, okay, so I assume it's a net positive venture for you then?
No, it's not net positive, but it's losing a lot less than I would if I just straight up bought everything. So.
Oh well, that's good then. I mean, yeah.
So I'm saving money. I'm probably cutting costs by at least 50%. So.
Oh, good, good. Well, there you
not
have
the
it.
Not the quickest, but it's yeah.
There you have it, Sorensen and Parnassus. If you want to crash Dave, he'll be out at Bandos. No, I'm not telling people to crash you. I'm just trying to spread information of.
Well, if anybody can crash me in my own instance, then I'll give you props.
Oh, okay, you are using your
2016.
Own
2016.
Yeah. So I mean, if you can crash with your instance, I will. Or if you can crash me in my instance, I will forfeit skill of the month, and you can win because clearly you know how to get past the game mechanics, and I will commend you for that. I don't condone it, but I will be very impressed if you're able to do that. Anyway.
All right. Thank you, Dave. Next up, we have some achievements of the week. Colton, you want to run through these?
Yeah, we have the RR Man, who got 99 Hunter on February 11th, 2016. And then Duke Juker got 99 Agility on February 6th. Duke Juker also got 99 Fletching on February 6th. And Duke Juker got 99 Mining on February 6th, 2016. Congratulations.
Good job, all. Always nice to see multiple on the same day from one individual. So,
oh yeah.
He was wondering if we were reading them on the show this week. Well, there we go. We just read your achievements, Mr. Duke Juker.
It's a big day.
Yes. I'd also be curious to know what the RR Man hunted to 99. What do people do today for Hunter?
They crystallize and do Grenwalls.
In the instance thing?
You can't do it in the instance anymore. You just do it in the...
Oh, right.
Yeah. So, that's a thing.
Yeah, for 99 Hunter, I did Grenwalls, but that was before crystallized. But yeah, I did it in the instance. I still have like 3,000 tickets. I kind of overshot that by a bit, but that's all right.
Nice.
All right. Good job, everyone. I believe Colton has the pick of the week this week.
Correct. I do. So, I've done... I can't remember what my last pick was, but part of what I love to do is I love nutrition, and people who know me know I'm, in real life at least, know I'm very particular about my eating habits, and I have been for quite a while. And one of the applications that helped me do that was an app that I believe is on Android. It's definitely on iOS. It's called MyFitnessPal. And you've probably heard of it if you've heard of much of food tracking. But if not, it's basically just an application that you can log whatever you've eaten. It's really quick, really simple. It's intuitive. You can scan barcodes with it with your smartphone. You can enter them on the computer, but it's easiest on the smartphone. You can scan barcodes. It basically has all the nutritional information for about every single restaurant that's out there that's more than just one single mom and pop. So it's extremely easy to use. It remembers what you eat, gives you detailed breakdowns of nutrients, and you can customize if you want to gain weight, you want to lose weight, you want to maintain, you want to hit certain macronutrient intakes, all that kind of stuff. So it's a really nice application, really quick, really easy to use. So I recommend it for anyone who is looking into sort of getting into better nutrition and getting a sort of a pulse check on what they're actually taking into their bodies. So, yeah.
Very interesting. I see they also have an Apple Watch app.
Yes. I don't have an Apple Watch, so I do not utilize that, but it's a thing.
All right. So you track everything then?
Yeah. I mean, not down to the minutiae. I mean, if you want to track your salad, I mean, I don't eat like dressing on my salad, so there's really nothing to track there. But I track just about everything. So,
okay.
And I have for the last 3 years, and it literally will take maybe 10 minutes of my time out of the entire day. And if that,
well,
it's
I mean, with the barcode, that really helps too.
Mm-hmm. So, and if you're a person like me who eats like the same thing all the time, then it's really quick.
So why don't somebody come up with a bar that you can eat that just has everything that you need in it?
Like for the whole day?
Yeah.
Because that's if you were to condense all, first of all, that would be massive, because in terms of
Whole day, let's just say per meal.
Oh, okay. I think they do. I mean, meal ready to eat if you want to like live like an astronaut or something.
There you
I
go.
Mean, they're not a bar, but they're in like those packs like army men have, and they're really condensed nutritional foods. So, I mean,
so how come we don't see that in the grocery stores then?
Because they're not exactly the most delectable of comestibles. Delectable
but shouldn't
comestibles.
Shouldn't it be, you know, utility and, what's the word I'm looking for here? Nutrients over that?
If only that were the world we lived in, Shane, but food tastes good, and thus we seek what pleases our palates.
See, and I have this idea that somebody could take and create, you know, something that converts energy into the physical atoms that we require. And you just plug yourself in at the end of the day, and there you go.
That's a little bit out there, Shane. A little bit too future techy for me.
All right.
I enjoy the ambition. I like to entertain that thought, but
I'd rather eat. I like eating. I enjoy the consumption process. So
I think it's very dangerous, actually.
Yeah, it's dangerous. That's why you have food scientists.
It's dangerous eating because it goes down the same, almost the same pipe that you breathe through. That's a horrible design, if you ask.
Have you had experience choking, Shane?
Yes.
I can tell.
See, somewhere in the universe, in some black hole collided, you know, we put hand sandwiches in our electronics and we plug ourselves in before we go to bed. You know what I'm saying? So,
it all
is what it is.
Instead of a juicer, it just like completely atomizes your, and then breaks it down into basic like carbon, nitrogen, hydrogen, oxygen.
Yes.
And you just,
there you go.
Yes.
You don't have sticks of ram. You got sticks of ham. You know. I mean, it's just all. It all works out. It falls into place a little too well, but you know.
All righty. Well, that's called MyFitnessPal. You can find it on the iOS and Android app stores. Free, I think. Yeah.
Yes, correct.
Yeah, free. All righty. So, what have we been doing this week, Dave?
Got a bit of a shameless self plug here. The past couple of weeks, I've actually been busy at work, setting up to be able to stream. Actually, got lots of new equipment, software, all that stuff. Actually plan on my first stream being tomorrow, but at the release of this podcast it will probably be today, and if you're listening to this on release, I will probably actually be streaming right now, so check it out. It's twitch.tv/arcanestreams, arkainstreams. The Twitter handle is the same. You can go there, follow me. I'll be posting updates, let you know when I go live. Follow me on both so you do get notifications when I go live. I will be doing mostly RuneScape, Diablo 3, and Hearthstone as well from time to time. But like I said, mostly RuneScape. Right now I'm just doing invention stuff. I don't know if it'll be next week or the week after when Rune Metrics comes out. I plan to be subscribing to that monthly. So definitely tune in to my stream. We'll be going through that. Questions, answer any of that stuff. You got anything about invention, we'll talk about that. I will be in the NXT beta next weekend. So provided that my software will pick up the NXT client and all that stuff, I will be streaming that. So come by, check it out, hang out. But I'm trying to stream fairly regularly, if not 5 days a week, pretty close.
On
the weekends when I do get free time. So I'm trying to get on a regular basis, like I said, maybe not daily, but as close to it as I can. So anyway, come check it out, hang out, let's have a good time, and hope to see you guys around.
And that's at Arcane Streams on both Twitch and Twitter, ARKAIN Streams. And it's important to get that right, because you mentioned it and I typed it into Twitter, and then I got a couple wrong pages first. So the streams part is important.
Yes, it is. Yes.
Okay.
So, and anybody that has played RuneScape since Dungeoneering, it's sort of kind of like a fun play on words with the necklace, the Arcane Stream necklace. So that wasn't part of the plan, but it just sort of aligned that way. So
very clever.
Anyway,
we will definitely be in contact with you, and yeah, we like it when our extended community members stream and interact with the media. We definitely want you to be a part of us here, and we'll try and help you out as much as we can with that too. So you can watch for Dave there, and I look forward to seeing what you do with that.
Definitely,
because you definitely
look forward
have
to see where it goes.
You have a great perspective that you can bring to it. So I think,
yeah, like I said, with Rune Metrics coming out, that is like up my alley. Like, that is probably going to be one of the best updates for me personally. Just in terms of, I just love the whole stats and just efficiency and training skills. I've always been a skiller at heart. I feel like a lot of the high level RuneScape 3, I should say, a lot of high level RuneScape 3 streamers is pretty much you tune in and they're either doing Virago or they're just bossing and stuff.
Yep.
I've never been into PVM really. I don't plan to. Any stuff that I do is just going to be for comp, or, you know, if I just really have nothing else to do. My stuff is mostly going to be about just training, just high level, but not at Virago. So just sort of a different twist. You know, like I said, when Rune Metrics comes out, you know, I'll be doing all kinds of stuff. If you can customize graphs and stuff, I don't know. I'll just try to explore as much as I can and just not just be a constant just, you know, oh, I'm 54 kills dry at Virago hard mode. Like, that's just so just, you know, it's just going to be pretty much just raw me playing, having a good time, listening to music, and hopefully talking with you guys. So anyway.
Excellent. And I do have to say, from looking at the streaming environment, we do need more of that, especially having so many streams focused on old school. So
right.
Sounds good. How about you, Colton?
This week in real life has been basically midterm week for me. I finished 2 5-week courses and had like 3 or 4 other exams in addition to those. So fun stuff. But in RS, I've been going crazy with Elite Clues. I don't think I'm ever going to stop. I did.
Why?
I think. What do you mean?
Why have you been going crazy with them?
I just like them. They're quick. They're fun. I can do the thieving when I'm AFK and then do the clue scrolls when I'm actually like paying somewhat of attention. And maybe I'll luck out one day. Who knows? I doubt it. I'm at 87, I think. I've opened over 40, I think, this week alone.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, best reward has been like 350k.
Ugh.
So yeah, been a little dry, but yeah, and just sort of waiting for invention skilling to come out. So
aren't we
uh-huh.
all
exactly
aren't we all
yeah
all right As for me this week, I've just been doing a little bit of work on the Clan Quest website. I am a part of that group, and we are redoing the website, so I started early procedures on that, mainly from a graphics end, which really isn't my forte, but we don't have any graphic designers at Clan Quest, so you have to do it all. So that's that.
Yep.
But on RuneScape, I have been doing something called farming incandescent energy.
That is a lucrative endeavor, my friend. I've actually, the past week or so, I've actually been kind of going bootleg Iron Man with all that. Because
yeah.
with the, like Parnassius said, the trade limit does need to be lifted. So, you know, I'll buy my 5K or whatever it is, and then I'll take a Nightmare Muspa and go farm some energy.
we totally forgot about that part of his question. Yes, it does need to be raised.
It needs to be raised at least by 25K or 225K, like runes or whatever. Because, I mean, pretty much all of the all the tier 90 weapons and all the degradable stuff is pretty much reliant on energy now. Like, yeah. Chitin is going to crash. Whatever you use for ascensions is going to crash. I know mine will because I have both mine augmented. So it's really going to become a commodity for
yeah,
sure.
And I mean, the GE can't keep up. Our last recorded price was $340 for the incandescent energy, mm-hmm. and I sold for $361. Yeah. 10K.
Lots of people are buying at least 500 last I checked.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's.
Outside the GE.
Oh, yeah. Like, ooh. Just. You can actually, after you get a lot, there's actually quite a bit on different worlds. Usually the higher level worlds that are just buying it straight out, they'll just walk around and say, hey, anybody want to sell their energy? And people are selling it for like 500. So I would street price it before you just dump it on the GE for sure, depending on what world you're on.
But, yeah. I will definitely do that. It's definitely worth doing that. And I mean, I'm sure you could sell other energies, but I think incandescent is the best because you get the most charge out of that, right?
Yeah, I mean, it probably... To crunch the numbers, you can probably see, but yeah, I mean, it's the least amount of energy for that charge. So I'm not sure what the actual numbers are, but 225 energy for 3K charges is pretty much the pinnacle of what it's going to be. So.
Yeah. So that's, I mean, it, I figure, okay, so I'm not doing invention as a skill right now, so I might as well take part in it that way.
Sure.
And it gives me something to do other than, you know, going back to the temple trekking idiots.
Well, yeah, either doing energy or just casually doing barrows. Actually, I've actually just sort of taken a break from invention for, you know, a couple days, and I'll just go and do, you know, maybe 10-15 trips of barrows, and I've actually gotten a few pieces, and I mean, they're going for, legs are usually 1.5 to 2 mil and tops are upwards of 5 mil. So
you,
I
guys
mean,
remember when Guff and Spear was 5 mil?
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Those were the days, and I guess we're kind of getting back there in a way. So.
Oh yeah, I mean, Derek's plate is like 5-6 mil right now. Bandos is 5-6 mil. I mean, it's pretty crazy.
It's a renaissance. It's a renaissance. But,
it really is.
It's, yeah, it really. It's this skill. As much as we want to bash on it, if we do, it really has given the economy a boost it needs to do, but or it needed. But I just think that some of the trade limits need to be lifted because it really is bottlenecking and just. Not really good.
Alrighty, well, there's an answer to your question, Pernassi. It's a little bit late, but we did get to number two.
Oh my god.
Anything else before we go?
I don't believe so.
Nope.
Alrighty then, well, we'll see you next week. Thank you for joining us, everyone. And remember, we are in Friends Chat, Bits Bytes, if you want to come and chat with us while you're scaping. See you next week.
See you.
Goodbye.